Two actually very brief points. I guess before that, I just wanted to talk to everybody. And I didn't know when I initially planned the time, like how long it would take. I thought it may take much shorter. It could be that I'm going to be towing the line a little bit, so feel free to walk out at 2:25 for Mincha. I really won't be offended. You could catch us on the recording, so I really won't be offended. And number one, I didn't make an outline, but I will send that very shortly in a sheet note sheet, hopefully by the end of the day, but no promises. And connected to that, a note about the shiur. So the shidos that I don't give as much attention to in the analysis, I'm going to try to mention them a couple of times, just so that it's very clear that they're an important part, but I may not, because of time restraints and for the sake of Chazara, it being most efficient, I may not do as much analysis on each one of those shidos, but I will try to mention them a couple of times. So Mumar Lahachis. Basically, the question is just a note in general, a bigger, broader point about Mumar. Mumriyas in general. So what we're trying to figure out is how we perceive and assess Mumriyas philosophically, like in terms of the various Hashkafic implications, and deeply connected to that, the impact his outlook and behavior can have or can continue to have on his relationship to Torah mitzvos. So to what extent can the otherwise default Kedusha and Kashrus Begavra be damaged? Be damaged. It's important to note that we're bestowed without much effort this kind of like pristine status, all of us as Jews. And really, it's given solely to us because of the general Ben Bris and Yisrael framework, rooted in very strong, in an ironclad Mesorah, with very high expectations that it puts, really expectations that it puts on all the members of Bnei Yisrael, of Ben Bris in general. So the potential alone to be L'Kayim Kol HaTorah Kula, because of, like I'm saying, this fortified framework, gives us what by normal standards we don't really deserve. I like to explain tzitzis this way. The reminder, when you take the reminder of Taryag Mitzvah seriously, that being made aware alone of every single mitzvah, lest that mitzvah or an opportunity for that mitzvah be encountered, you'll now, because of the reminder, the constant reminder, seize that opportunity. That itself makes you kind of like omed l'kayim kol ha-mitzvos by putting it at the forefront of your mind, and that is already almost, that's how we explain the Ma'amar Chazal, it's ki'ilu ki'im kol rega v'rega. Basically, the idea that with little effort, because of the expectations, the demands put on Bnei Yisrael, these ironclad, deeply anchored framework of Taryag Mitzvos, Min Astam, we're all awarded Olam Haba, rewards and things like only usually come because you earn them. But because Bistam Yisrael is Nikra Tzadik, Ve'amech Kulam Tzadikim Le'olam Yirshu Aretz, everyone is a Tzadik, even though they haven't done anything yet to deserve that title. For all these reasons, for all these reasons of the expectations, the framework that each Ben Bris and Yisrael is introduced to from the minute he's born. So because of that, Yisrael Stam is the exact of these things, and to disrupt that Stamus requires like a formal extrication from one of or all the dimensions that the framework itself of Kedushas Yisrael provides. And is based on, and particular to our sugya, the question really is, how much can that Kedushas Yisrael, how much can that really be achieved, I would say? The disruption through his behavior, conduct, his orientation, exhibited in a particular mitzvah. As such, like let's just now outline what it possibly reflects and assess whether or not this like mumer status challenges this presumed default I'm calling v'ameich kulam tzadikim. So obviously our focus is going to be on halachas, but it's a question you need to ask about mumrius in general. To what extent it can really disrupt, what, again, not going to go into the whole thing again, but this default kind of tzadik, just to use the term loosely, status of every single Yisrael because he's in the framework of Taryag Mitzvos. Omeid, Laasos, and Lakayin, Taryag Mitzvos. So there are two points really to make from this, and this really ends up explaining the analysis that Rosenzweig went back and back to on the Ra'av versus the Rashba, the Ra'av and the Rambam versus the Rashba. On the one hand, which is the point I've really been making until now, on the one hand, it's harder to disrupt the status given the fact that it's provided, it's bestowed to us without doing really much. Which almost implies a little bit that what you do matters less than the fact that you have the potential to do it. Which means that you shouldn't be able to disrupt that so simply with your actions. If actions don't give it to you, actions, you know, shall not take it either. But there's also the opposite point that needs to be made too. And that's more like the Rashba, where we're going to see. But the opposite point needs to be made also. And this is really just wherever Rosenzweig is thinking, where his head's at. Again, my best guess. I didn't ask him every single thing and interview him. But the opposite thing is also true. In other words, if it's actually absolutely impossible to get rid of it, no matter what, you can do avodah zarah and nothing can get rid of this default status, then what is the status at all to begin with? You know, what is it really saying? Is it really connected to your tayag mitzvos, to your being in the framework? Because if you can do anything and nothing in the world can disrupt it, that would also be a problem. That would make even this chiddush that ultimately provides us, you know, this framework, that would even make this chiddush and this presumed status of tzaddik, that would also make it a whole achucha otula. And it wouldn't really mean anything at the end of the day if no matter what, you know, you kind of were able to hold on to it. Okay? I think that is, and that's more like where these other Rishonim who don't believe less in like the optimism of Jews and in the framework that a person's born into as a Jew, the Ra doesn't believe less in that. Again, we're going to get to that. I'm jumping a lot, but it's because everybody already knows the Ra and the Rashba. He doesn't believe less in that. He just believes more in being very careful about applying this unconditionally. And there needs to be at some point to cross the threshold. And so the debate really becomes, you know, where is the line of keeping the default status, which you get automatically, it seems, and also being able to lose that because of how much ultimately it does give you, and that it can't just apply unconditionally. Fine. So to be clear about all this, again, it is very reasonable and compelling to sidestep all of this mumar question. In other words, you really, like we're going to see in the Rashba, you really can't sidestep, you really can't lose what you're given whatsoever. No, really, like there's a very, very limited amount of cases where you can. And basically say that the whole assessment of mumrius, of mumar in general, but again, our focus on mumar lahach is in the psychology of the particular mumar. You know, whether lahachis, let's say avon, avera kala, chamura, even avodizara, he violates something, let's say, because of taiva, ambivalence, frustration, or even like a theological conviction or rebellion. So what does the fact that he's doing it for any one of these reasons, for ambivalence, rebellion, what does that say about this kind of person? Who is he? Can we diagnose him not only based on the behavior and the attitude he's exhibited in the past, can we diagnose how he's going to approach any particular case going forward? Which is a very technical question, very pragmatic. A mumar can't shed his status, shed this default, Kedushas Yisrael, but at the end of the day, every single person we can predict to a certain extent how they'll act in a future given situation. And it's possible to look at the mumar question. Let's just focus. I threw out a lot of things. Let's just focus on mumar lahachis because that's our sugya. The only question might just be, he's a lahachis guy. Whatever lahachis entails, can we make a good assessment of what this person will do next? And that's really the only question we're going to deal with when considering his kashrus or paslus in any particular area of halacha. Give it shechita, whatever it is. Will he shecht charoi, and can we trust him? That's one way to look at the entire thing, based on his past orientation or current orientation, can we know about his actions going forward by diagnosing the type of person he is? Certainly the more isolated the issue is, right, the more local and it's like, you know, outside, or like I guess isolated the issue is, the more we need not worry about anything else going forward. It could just be an isolated incident, a one-timer, or it could even be something which doesn't necessarily spill over into the other areas of halacha. Two disconnected mitzvos or averos, again, they're just two distinct mitzvos and averos, and you can't learn one from the other. So the more that's true, but the more connected things are, be it behaviorally or objectively, I'm going to explain those two things, the more connected they are, so the more likely we could be predictive about his behavior. But again, it's all behavior, all practical. Does it spill over and give us reason to be worried? That's a simple psych evaluation question. And when it can be neutralized, when we can avoid it somehow with extraneous means, perfect, we can neutralize it, no biggie. So that perspective, again, being very clear, this first perspective is the Rashba and the Chidushim and the Torah Sabayis. The Rashba and the Chidushim and the Torah Sabayis basically says that he has two deos. He says that when it comes to mumar, lahachis, ledavar, echad, So for sure, as long as, when it comes to Shechita, as long as, or whatever the case may be, Amumr L'davar Acher, L'hachas L'davar Acher, is going to be kosher as long as we can neutralize the problem. No problem whatsoever. He has two deos when it comes to Mumr L'Oso Davar, if that's okay. One, he says, maybe it's no good, Afilu B'Di'eved, but it's possible that the Rashi thinks Bein L'Oso Davar. Bein L'davar Acher, Amumr L'hachas, is going to be good, he's going to be kosher B'Di'eved, as long as, like I said, you can neutralize all the practical problems. Because the whole question of Mumr L'Achis, Afilu possibly L'Oso Davar L'Nevela, is just going to be a pragmatic, behavioral, psychological question. But nothing to do, he can't taint or disrupt this default Kedusha, Yisrael status. But Rav Rosenzweig is making the important point, and again, I work backwards a little bit. Rav Rosenzweig is making the important analysis as follows. I'll say it once, I'll hopefully try to be clear. And he was trying to compare Litei Avon and L'Hachis in terms of the analysis. The more you think that when it comes to Litei Avon, it's very hard to make him a Gavra Rasha, the more likely you think that when assessing the question of Mumr Litei Avon, that question has to be assessed differently than Mumr L'Hachis. Because if Mumr L'Hachis is not a fundamentally Gavra Rasha, but he just has a Chashad problem, that's totally separate from thinking from how we default probably look at, you know, a priori at Mumr L'Hachis. Mumr L'Hachis, we're going to assume he's not just a chashad issue; he's probably a gavra rasha. So the more you're someone who thinks it's behavioral in Litei Avon, you're going to discuss the two questions separately and distinctly and consider them mumar. Yeah, maybe they share the same word, but they're two totally different people. And by comparison, similarly, if you think already, like the Rambam, we saw for sure, Meshuma la'aver min averos, you know, Mumar l'chol ha'Torah kula b'litei avon, no matter, you know, what you're a Mumar in, like that whole analysis of the Rambam. So the more you think that he's a Gavra Rasha and litei avon, the closer together and analytically, you'll probably discuss the two questions of litei avon and l'hachas. And the word Mumar containing both of those things is very reasonable. But what we found is that actually the opposite comes out to be true. The Rashbah already told us what the Rashbah says. He seems to think that L'Hachis himself isn't such a Gavra. Oh, I'll say better. The Rashbah, we already know that when it comes to Mumr Litei Avon, doesn't see it as a Gavra Rasha problem. So you think that in his analysis of Mumr L'Hachis, he would have a very strong L'Hachis. You can't talk about L'Hachis and Litei Avon similarly. But we actually find the opposite to be true. That for the Rasha, both Litei Avon and L'Hachis are actually both downgraded to merely a Chashad problem and not a Gavra, Rasha, fundamental psul problem. But when it comes to the Ra'a, even though, yes, he upgrades Litei Avon and Litei Avon is a Gavra Rasha, he nevertheless thinks that makes even a Mumr L'Hachis even more a Gavra Rasha, even more Mufka. And ironically, what you come out is that for him, for the Ra'a, Mumr L'Hachis and Mumr Litei Avon are still separate, even though they're both Gavra Rashas. Maybe because that's what we're going to explain. And for the Rashba, Mumr Litei Avon and Mumr L'Hachis are really very closely connected. I'm going to try, and in the Rashba, there are a couple of Rayos that Rav Rosenzweig pointed to. Let's just say five. My count's five, but you can really break them up however you'd like. There are about five Rayos to explain the Shitas HaRashba and this kind of view that sees Litei Avon and L'Hachis as very connected, even though it's all, he just makes it all a question of chashad, that we're worried about his behavior in a particular area because it exhibited past behaviors and current orientations. Number one, when it comes to the question of whether or not the Gemara in Avodah Zarah asks whether we treat a mumar like a min or just a mumar, the Rashba actually says, he has two deos in the Chidushim. Number one, which is impressive on its own, I'll say it this way. Number one, he says that maybe even the mandamar min, the most likely view that we'd invalidate Shechita Lagamri, treat him ka'akum, a min is an akum. We'd invalidate a Shechita Lagamri. The Rashba says, even according to that man da'amar, even according to Rav Acha, who holds kimin, nevertheless, we'd still say, Momer kimin, his Shechita is not nevela. You can only say that, I know Ellie likes this logic, or maybe it was Josh, I was overhearing today. You can only say that even the man da'amar min, the Shechita is kosher, if you have very strong conviction, again, it's not impossible. But if you have very strong conviction that when it comes to Mumr L'Hachis, we're not just going to stam, kick him out, make his shchita kinachri. We're not just going to treat him kagoy. We're more likely to treat it as a super chashad issue than anything else. Even the man da'amar that most likely would see this whole thing as shchitas nevela, as treating a mumar ke'akum, Even in that day, the Rashi says it's possible Shechita would be kosher. Even Mandar and Momer came in. The other option, other one she says is that's not true, and the Machlokes is Gufa this, whether we treat him Ka'akum or not. If you say Momar, he's a Yisrael, just has some problems, or a lot of problems, and if he's a Min, so he's going to be Kegoy. But the Rashi says we pask in the Kula. Again, that's not impressive. You can pask in the Kula. It sounds like, as the Ran, who disagreed with that, even acknowledged, passing the Kula makes more sense here. But again, passing the Kula shows that Mumar Lahachas were treated like a Mumar anyway, and not like a Akum or a Goy at all. So that's the first. That just shows strongly the Rashba's view that we treat Mumar Lahachas, Afil Oso Davar, just as someone who has some Chashad questions, and that could be neutralized. And Shchitaso is going to be Kasher, be the Eved, and not something with more fundamental flaws. That's number one. Number two, so he has a bunch of like logical points, which I just think are really worth teasing out. He says, because we don't say that mumar le'oisei davar, mumar le'te'avon, le'oso davar is a mumar le'chol ha'torah kula, therefore it must be that a mumar le'hachis le'oso davar isn't going to be a gavra rasha, isn't going to be a fundamental problem. But let's remember, he's going min hakal al hakaved, hakal to chomer. The problem is what he's saying is because the mumar l'te'avon guy isn't fundamentally disqualified, isn't be'etzem agaver rasha, so that means that for sure we're not going to say he's not mumar l'chol torah kula. So therefore, that means we're going to say about mumar l'hachis, who would have the hava, mean he's even worse. You could only say that if what you're trying to prove is that we have a very, very high threshold that needs to be crossed in order to turn one itself into a gavra rasha. The default is very strong, and it's not stam that we're just going to say a mumar, whoever he is, even if he's lahachis, afil lahachis, it's not stam that we're just going to rip away his default status as a gavra kasher, as a Yisrael kasher. That's the only way you can say, you can bring a raya from the fact that we don't make a mumar l'te'avon a mumar l'chol torah kula, that we also don't make a mumar lahachis Kula. That's number one. And there are a lot of very similar things. And the Ran kind of does the same thing. Al-Harif, the Ran basically, he doesn't go as far as the Rash, but as we know, the Ran is more of the school of the Balei HaTosis, the Rush. But the Ran doesn't go as far, but the Ran uses the same logic to say that a Mumar in between, the Mumar who Shalola Te'avon, is going to be Kasher. He's not going to be a problem. The Gavra, unlike some of the other Rishonim, he's not going to be, in the in-between case, he's not Le'Te'avon and he's not Lahachis. That guy, because we say mumar l'te'avon l'osa davar isn't a mumar l'chol torah kula, in other words, a mumar l'te'avon is not a gavra rasha, that proves the in-between case. He won't go as far as the Rash, but to say it proves the lahachis case, but the between te'avon and lahachis, it does prove that he's not going to be a gavra rasha, but just have a chashad problem. That was the Rash. That's the second proof that this is how the Rash was going, and that this analysis works this way, ironically works the way we're saying, which I'll say it again, and not maybe the way you would have thought intuitively. And remember, this is even a bigger chiddush for the Rashi, because his le'te'avon is very light. So to bring a raya that te'avon, who isn't such a bad guy, isn't a mumar l'chol torah kula, and then to say that this guy who's not so bad is going to be a raya that a mumar l'hachis isn't a mumar l'chol torah kula, just makes it even more surprising. Because le'te'avon is over here, and Lahachis really could be over here. Especially with the Rashba, who puts Lateyavon as like the most innocuous person in the room. So for him to say that because we don't treat him severely, we're also going to treat this guy not severely, that's an even bigger chiddush, right? As we've been saying. Nothing new. Number three, even the view... Even in the Rashba, I mentioned that the Rashba holds... that the Rashba has a deya that maybe Mumar Lateyavon, the Nevela, Lateyavon... That a mumar l'nevei lahachis, the Rashba has to be that the mumar nevela lahachis may actually be pasul afilu b'di'evet. I mentioned that view. So in that view, the Rashba proves it from something very strange. That when a mumar l'nevela is lahachis, so hishchita is pasul b'di'evet, he's more like a gavra rasha, let's say, just use that term for argument's sake. His raya is because we see, and this is like a three-pointed third proof. We see, I can't be as bad as like these other charts where like you end up like going the whole way with the tabs. Okay, this is the third point. So even the view that's possible when it comes to mumar oichel nevelos lahachis, he says that he brings a raya from the fact that he can't bring a korban when he eats nevela. He brings a raya that he can't bring a korban. But the problem is that a mumar nevelos lahachis can't bring a korban for that same thing. Like mumar lochalchelev, the Gemara in Harius. But the problem is that that's also true. A mumar l'te'avo in the ochel nevelos also can't bring a korban l'nevela. And yet, what do we know about mumar ochel nevelos l'te'avon? His shechit is fine. So even as he's bringing a raya, that maybe mumar ochel nevelos lahachis is like kigoy, his shechit is no good. Even that raya is problematic because of the fact that mumar l'te'avon has the same problem, and yet he's good. So he can't get away from the comparison between mumar l'te'avon, mumar l'hachis, to mumar l'te'avon. It's just so strange. It's such a strange thing. And the lashon he even uses when he says, within this, the lashon he uses when he says that the mumar ochel nevelos l'hachis is pasul, afilu b'diyeved, is not that he's a mumar l'chol ha'torah kula. He's that he's a mumar l'chol ha'torah kula lo yisadavar. He just can't get it out of his head that we can't treat this guy, we can't blow up this problem too much. It's isolated, put it in quarantine. You know, very inyani diyoyim, put it in quarantine, and that's it. But we can't look at this as a problem for everything. We can't look at it as a problem for everything. That's number three. Number four, in the Chidushim, he brings, The Chidushim he writes, he doesn't say, the reason, right, he doesn't say that the reason why a mumar ochel nevelos lahachis is kosher is because mumar laoso davar is not a mumar lakol Torah kula. He doesn't say that. He could have said the reason why mumar laoso davar, mumar ochel nevelos lahachis isn't going to be, his shechit is not going to be possible. Why would that be? Because he's not a mumar lakol Torah kula. He could have just said that, brought it from the Gemara. What does he say? He says the reason why a mumar ochel nevelos lahachis is hishchita is kshera bidi eved is because a mumar a meshuma ledavar acher is not a mumar lechol Torah kula. Man the kashya, a mumar ledavar acher makes sense that hishchita, because they're two unrelated areas, it makes sense that hishchita might be kasher and that he's not a mumar lechol Torah kula. But a mumar loso davar lahachis, at least in loisa davar, in that exact thing, hishchita should be no good. It shouldn't be good in this area. But he brings a raya from something less, again, to something more. Meshumah ledavar acher is not a mumar l'chol Torah kula. It's a raya that a mumar l'osa davar isn't a mumar l'chol Torah kula. Again, you could only say all these things if your assumption is that you need to, the burden of proof is on saying that we remove this guy's Kedush Yisrael, this Gavra Kasher, to make him a Gavra Rasha. The burden of proof is on saying that you need to find that idea exists in order to have maybe the audacity to strip it and take it away from him. Again, for all the reasons we said. And lastly, just his lashon is just important. This is a lighter raya to the Rashi's idea. His lashonas are just very clear. Eina kishchidas nachri. This is just proving his point that, you know, shchidas kasher b'diavad. Eina kishchidas nachri diyisraelu. Diyisraelu, he's a Yisrael. Elashem moirid b'mitzvah zu. Okay, I mean, not okay, but he's more of a mitzvah zoo. But don't think this is indicative of how we must treat him in Kol HaTorah Kula. Okay, that's the Rashba. And that is the view that I would say gets a little bit queasy about the possibility of taking away even a guy who's lahachas. Queasy about taking away the default status, what I'm calling, again, like, Ame Chulan Tzadikim. Which I mean, yeah, okay. I could explain that later, but not for now. But the raya is very weird. Ve'ame chulam tzadikim, because you're asking how you know everyone's entitled to olam haba, and this says because ve'ame chulam. So how does the pasuk know that everyone's a tzaddik? How do I know that kol Yisrael yeshlam chelak olam haba? Not everyone's a tzaddik. Ve'ame chulam tzadikim lo olam yeshu aretz. So you can only say, you have to assume almost. You can't assume that everyone has done every mitzvah in the world and is a tzaddik. But you could assume that there's almost like this default because of the framework everybody's in, that they're a tzaddik, and that's what the Olam Yerushu Aretz really means. Yeah, Zeb, what's up?
Yeah,
Fine.
Is it possible, like, with the Amish Kula, it's like, is it possible that, like, you're complaining, like, saying that this guy's not losing his current Kedushas Yisrael, and, like, Al-Fabisha, Chakdei Yisrael, who, like, he's not a tzaddik at all. Like, he never was. He never deserved to
be. No, I know. All I'm saying, right. All I'm saying, I'm just bringing out the idea. Yeah. No, I hear what you're saying. I'm just bringing out the idea that the default is given, it's all almost irrespective of a person's demonstrated behavior. Whether I do good or I do bad, not so. Whether I do good or I just don't do anything, I'm still considered kind of like in the Torah of Cheskas Kashas. I'm a good person. I'm maybe even considered a tzaddik. I maybe even get Olam Haba without doing anything. So I'm saying we could only say that if the default is very strong, that there's a very strong framework which every Jew is presumed to be in. And maybe because of that, you need a real Maisa HaKasha to take yourself out of it. That's all I'm saying.
So maybe that comes out from the idea of Israel keeping his original status. I don't know if that's like necessarily, you can use that as the backbone.
No, it is, because the point is the Rashba, what we're getting at is that the Rashba is queasy. I'll explain later. The Rashba is queasy with the idea that it's like bigger this unified theory. I'll just say the idea now. Where Rosenberg was suggesting, basically, I'm going to read it because I just think it's very good. That again, just to be clear, we may have thought that for the Manda Amar who thinks the Mumer Lete Avon is just a Chashad problem, that we talk about a Mumer Lete Avon separately from Mumer Lahachas. How could you speak about them together? One guy just gives into the temptations. He's not so bad. We can't trust him, but he's fine. Mumer Lahachas, the guy is married by Malchus. How can we talk about the two together? Two different things. One's probably the most gavra, psul gavra, and one's probably the most just chashat. But what we end up finding, and the opposite is true too, the more you think letei avon, obviously, is going to be this gavra rasha, that is, temptation is a reflection of his lack of commitment, and his religious personality, you know, is even you know, undermined totally, then the more likely you are to talk about mor letei avon and mor lahachas together, because they're both going to be just psul begavras. They're both going to be very similar, and the differences are only circumstantial, really. That one's taiva and one's lahachas. But what we end up finding is the opposite. The Rashba is the most kal view of letei avon, that it's just chashad, also looks at mumer lahachas that same way. That it's not a psul gavra. He compares them all over the place. All it is a chashad issue, bein letei avon, bein lahachas. And we find in the Ra'ah, is actually the opposite. The Ra'ah really thinks that Mumer Lete Avon really is a, the Rambam, the Ra'ah, really think Mumer Lete Avon is a Psul Begavra. And nevertheless, they think you can't even talk about Lete Avon and Lahachis, per se, always the same way, because Mumer Lahachis is just an even more bigger Psul Gavra. So it ends up being just funny how it ends up working out. The only way this works, though, they've kind of pushed Mumer Lahachis even further than Mumer Lete Avon. The only way this works, as Rosenberg said, is the following. He says, from the perspective of the unified theory of Mumrim, you know, all of this actually makes a lot of sense. What are the expectations that we have, and how easy is it to cross the red line? Instead of seeing it as a contrast to Lite Avon, Lahakas as a contrast to Lite Avon, we need to look at it as the bigger picture. There's a much bigger picture going on here. Forget about the differences and the similarities between Lite Avon and Lahakas for a second. But the point is, whichever Rishon is willing to justify, you know, less, these kinds of breaches, or he doesn't think you can breach the Torah in any way, so the more likely he is to be sensitive to even more egregious conduct. If you're someone who thinks even taiva is a bad thing, and that gets rid of your stam status, your stam cheskas kashrus, so he's also going to say about lahachis that that's even worse. That of course, if I'm saying about letei avon, he doesn't keep his default status. For sure about lahachis, he's also going to lose that default status. And the point being, exactly, if letei avon starts off on a low threshold, then maybe lahachis, also reflecting the same perspective, also affects the rest of halacha. If you're lahachis, if you're very low on letei avon, and you think that any significant amount of taiva, any significant amount of mumers letei avon is going to make you a gavra rasha, so you're also going to say that you can you're going to accomplish that even more so with Mumer Lahachis. But if you're a very hardliner when it comes to Lete Avon and you're like the Rashba and you think that even you think that a Mumer Lete Avon, okay, he is doing some bad things, but it doesn't make it that easy for him to lose his Kedushas Yisrael to just become a Gavir Rasha. So maybe that same, the reason he came to that is also the reason he'll tell you about Mumer Lahachis. Yeah, he's a bad guy, he's rebelling. But at the end of the day, he can't just stam that easily lose his Kedushas Yisrael. And that's really what's going on with the Rashba and the Ra. It comes from this theory about how easy it is just to take away a guy's Kedushas Yisrael. That's what it seems to be going on here. So far we've spoken about the Rashba. But I want to ask, that it's hard to take it away because of the default. But I also said earlier that if it's impossible to lose it, then what does it really mean? You know, it has to be based on something. Your actions need to have some consequences. And your hashkafos, your theology, the way you think about these things, your relationship to the Ribono Shel Olam has to make a difference at the end of the day in how you assess your status, your identity as a Jew. We may be very careful about how willy-nilly we are in taking it away and giving it, but at the end of the day, it needs to be, maybe there needs to be something that could damage his reputation. So what possibly is that could compromise the default status? So like I said, we had the Rashba who said you can't, and we had the Bala Maor. The Bala Maor was the Rashba quoted in Torah Abayis, that no matter what, either Mumer Leosadav or Lahachis, he's Kasher Lechatchila to Shecht. It's like the ultimate view. Again, what I'm calling the Amei Kulam Tzadikim. Apologies for the conflation. But that's what I'm referring to it now. That's the Bala Maor. But the possibilities exist. And I'm just going to, Rav Rosenzweig didn't do this so much. I'm going to separate the possibilities, the perspectives, and then just kind of plug in the details. But there are different ways of looking at Mumer Lahachis and why his behavior catapults from just a Chashad problem to really a real fundamental Gavir Rasha issue, and in different ways. We have to think about who this Mumer Lahachis is. Who are we dealing with when we see him on the street? What do we think about him? We should talk about him, but when we talk about him, like, you know, what kind of impression does that type of person leave us with? Mumer Lahachis. So there are a couple of things. I mean, really just could be like an undermining attitude. This Lahachis is an undermining attitude that reflects his lack of commitment to the whole. Something similar we said even about Litayavon, either because of temptation, which is the Tayavon part, his lack of commitment, the fact that he'll give in so easily to temptation, or this lack of commitment reflected by retaliation. He retaliates because he doesn't really, he's not committed. He doesn't feel, he doesn't identify strongly enough with Torah mitzvot. And this has to do with his perspective and orientation, and that could make him a Gavir Rasha. That could be a serious chink in the armor of his Gavir Rasha because he lacks the commitment to that framework, which we were talking about as the basis of kind of ennobling this guy. That's number one, an attitude that reflects a lack of commitment. It could also be a more objective question that doesn't have to do with the psychology of this person and his hashkafos, but it's a more objective question in assessing what really is, you know, the ABCs, what is the DNA of halacha, of tarag mitzvos? What is it contingent upon? You know, what kind of sufficiently damages on an objective level, like fundamentally, what damages a person, you know, the fullness, the totality of Tarag Mitzvos? So that a person doesn't lose everything he's been given to fault. What are the dimensions that goes into, building up the Kedushas Yisrael perspective? What does Kedushas Yisrael really mean? Really certain things run absolutely counter, are so antithetical that they remove you from Kedushas Yisrael, either compartmentally. You can be removed from Kedushas Yisrael compartmentally. Like if you, for example, treat a certain mitzvah in a derogatory enough way, maybe it removes you from Kedushas Yisrael, legabe, that thing, something possibly Rosenzweig mentioned in Tosfos, and that Rashba, that one line in the Rashba, Mumer l'kol ha-Torah kula l'osa davar. Or they run so counter and are so antithetical that they remove you from Kedushas Yisrael, not just in the thing that you've exhibited this corrosive behavior, but in Kol Torah Kula entirely. That this minor, it seems minor, it really isn't minor, and it totally removes you from everything that Kedushas Yisrael was about. Here we're just going to outline a couple of things. Number one, I'll move a little quicker. Maybe we'll have to break this up in two. I don't think so. Number one is looking at his din begavra. He's a scoffer, a bogade. He has contempt. It's not a lack of commitment only, but he has contempt against the entire system. in a which way that his behavior in one Maisa Aveira transcends the particular sin. It isn't about the details of this or that. It's not how bad it was, you know, or this mitzvah, you know, more than others. But we treat traitors harshly. He's a traitor. We don't care how he's a traitor, what he did to be a traitor, but we treat him harshly because he rejects it. And it's likely reflective of Shar Mitzvos, of how he looks at other mitzvos. So that guy, he's Mufka, he's a bogeid, b'toyro mitzvos. Fine. Then there are two other perspectives which Rav Rosenberg brought out through Shas Hashmat. There are three categories when it comes to Yehareg v'Aliyavur, for which someone has to give up their life and not, you know, accede to the sin. We have the Gimel Averos, all have Mekoros. You know, Avodah Zarah is from V'Ahavta Hashem Elokecha, Shvichas Damim from the Svara, and Gilei Arayos, there was some discussion about where exactly that comes from. It's just a Gemara, but I just didn't get a chance to look at it. Rav Rosen mentioned maybe that it was a Hekesh from Avodah Zarah, but others said that it's related to Shvichas Damim. Just a Gemara, like I said. That's one. Number two is Bifar Hesya, which comes from a pasuk of Losisach Halalu Hashem Kachiv and Nikdashli B'Soich Bnei Yisrael. You have to sanctify God's name. Don't desecrate it and sanctify it in public. That's Bifar Hesya. But Shas Hashmad doesn't have a makor. And the question is, and really, like, what is Shas Hashmad? Why does someone have to give up their life? Afilu Arkisa De Misana. Why does he have to give up his life even for something so seemingly basic as Arkis of the Misana, just because it's Shas Hashmat? So Rosh Hashanah is really two approaches. One is that it kind of fits in to Avodah Zarah, that the actual limud, there's no marker because it fits into Avodah Zarah. He didn't say this explicitly in Shir, but I spoke to him afterwards. And it's that basically the idea of Shas Hashmat is, even though this thing wasn't such a big deal, because the Anas made it a matter of principle, he made it a theological, religious issue, even though on its own, in terms of the details, it wasn't. The Chumras Avera wasn't there, but the context and the Bogades making it a matter of principle turns it into a kind of Avodah Zarah. It turns it into the ultimate, I guess, like, rejection of standing by your commitment to Torah mitzvos. The Nitziv, the Sheldo says this, and the Nitziv kind of has this line. Rav Ozer didn't like this approach as much. He liked the second one, which we're going to get to. Explanation of Shas Hashmat. But the Nitziv kind of says it's like, for example, the equivalent of Zarak Evan Lemarkulis. You know, that's what this Arkaz of the Mesana is in the area of Shas Hashmat. It's like basically like Avodah Zarah. The other thing is that there doesn't need to be a Makar because it's really much bigger. And maybe it's like a bin and av of all the different Yehareg V'Aliyavurs. That, you know, once you've lost the framework of Torah Mitzvah, it's kind of like the Minchas Chinuch, you know, that just what is physical life without spiritual life? When you lose the framework of Tarag Mitzvos, we really need to stand up. When that's what's at stake and challenge, we really need to stand up and draw a line in the sand and not give up anything. To make them, because that slowly but surely they'll chip away this, chip away that, and nothing will be left. And it really bespeaks of the interrelationship of mitzvos that kind of, they're attacking the entire system. You know, they're kind of attacking the entire system. And once that happens, you've lost the framework that makes physical life meaningful, which is what Shas Hashmad is really trying to attack. All of Tarag Mitzvos, the entire system. And even one mitzvah, because of the interrelation between all of the mitzvos, you can't bifurcate and you can't compartmentalize Torah Mitzvos, which undermines the fact Torah Mitzvos is a system. It's Tarag Mitzvos. Each one kind of adjusts the other in many ways. There's an equilibrium. You know, Bal Tosef, Bal Tigra, Kol Amosif Goreya. You know, everything has a perfect equilibrium, and we can't really lose any of that. And you could even kind of say, this is like option 3A, within a particular mitzvah, there's like a certain perspective that's required. That could also be true. Yeah, okay, we'll get to that. Yeah. There's a certain necessary perspective towards Torah mitzvos, Tarag mitzvos, and you need to, and that perspective is really what's under threat, and if you, the second you lose that, it really, like I said, it really, just like we were talking about Avodah Zarah the other day, it really makes everything else, there's no framework, it makes everything else, you know, almost not worth it. But I was just pointing out that you, besides like looking at everything, you know, in terms of Tarag mitzvos and the interrelationship between all of them and the system, you could even say within a particular mitzvah, that certain perspectives are required in order to trigger, you know, the fullness, let's say, of that mitzvah. You know, like we discussed, we're going to discuss by explaining the Rush, and when it comes to She'eino Choshesh Lezvoach, but there are certain mitzvahs where, like, maybe you need to buy in to the actual mitzvah in order for it to work. You know, like the idea of, you know, Itzumo Shayom is Mechaper on Yom Kippur. So your perspective on that mitzvah, it doesn't, if you don't believe in Yom Kippur's kapara ability, so it doesn't affect how we look at you in kashrus, but you need to have a proper perspective in that mitzvah to trigger the din of Itzumo Shayom. Because your relationship to that mitzvah is very important in order for it to work. And we were saying by Shechita, maybe the same thing. That if you don't believe in the Koach HaMatir, it's possible it just never works. Possible you have to believe in Shechita and not in Achilas Nevela in order for your Shechita to work. So if you're a Mumar, Ochel Nevelos, it could be that you've lost that ability to be Matir Shechita. But again, that just affects you Lagabe Shechita, but not Lagabe everything else. And then there was like this discussion in the Magen Avraham or Akiva Eger, yeah, one second, where the Magen Avraham kind of extended that to Tefillin as well. That you need to kind of like be someone who believes in the concept of Tefillin for you to be a Bar Kshira. But Rabbi Ozai pointed out, and Rabbi Akiva Eger, really pointed out that you can't necessarily learn from one to the other because each mitzvah operates differently. Yeah. Sorry, that was a little confusing. Yeah. I think it could even. I think it could extend to Mumin L'Tiavon, but just yeah. Okay. What? I'll tell you after. I mean, if everything's about discipline, then perhaps a person who lacks discipline can't appropriately project the kedusha goal of shechita. This guy's goof of the opposite of what we believe in. What? No, he not if he's Ochel Nevelos L'Tiavon. It's not about believing. So this guy is like the status which we're trying to militate against. Someone that we believe that Kedusha is found by being disciplined and approaching our food with an elevated perspective towards meat, towards like eating meat, not just giving in to our temptations. So who a bigger mufka from this than someone who has an established persona of Mumra Ochel Neves L'Tiavon. Okay, that's it for now though. Okay. So within these different approaches towards how we can look at Mumra Lahaches as a Mufka, you know, Gavra, again, I can't connect every single approach, every Rishon to an approach. We tried in some of them, but it's easier in some more than others, but I just wanted to lay out the approaches. The last one was a little tricky, you could maybe etch that out if it didn't make sense to you. But we basically said a couple of things, the attitude, the objective question, you know, the Din de Gavra, and then the Shas HaShmad. Two Shas HaShmad, that we can look at Mumar in the same way as the Shas HaShmad issue. At the same way, the Anas kind of made it a matter of principle, and that makes it a much, the Chumrah, as Avera itself, kind of is amplified. So when someone does an Avera Lahachis, it could be he's taking something as simple, you know, as simple as a mitzvah, Avera Kala, and he's making it against Reb Olshom as a matter of principle, a philosophy. And it turns this Mais Avera into a worse Avera. Alternatively, it could be that when you're Mumar Lahachis and against one particular Avera, you're abandoning Beshita, you're abandoning the framework, you're saying, I don't care about this mitzvah, you can't compartmentalize his Lahachis in one mitzvah and think that when he does the other 612, that works. Because all mitzvahs are interconnected. And the second you're Lahachis to one, it affects the perfect balance that all mitzvahs offer to each other. And even in other mitzvahs, when he does those, he's not even really doing them in the correct way. That's another way we can understand Mumar Lahachis. And maybe again, you could even understand the Bepar Hesya now in Yehari Vel-Yavor in these last two ways, that it becomes more chamor when it's in public, in the public eye, it kind of amplifies the Maisa Avera, or it kind of represents this person's attitude towards mitzvos, that he's willing, he kind of cheapens, you know, the observance of one particular mitzvah or another, the fact that he decides to publicize his absolute disregard for a particular mitzvah, which takes away from all Tarag mitzvahs. Okay, fine. That was a little bit sticky. Okay. fine. Those are the different approaches. Those are different approaches. I think they're clear. Be'ezra Hashem. If not, honestly, talk to me after. So what comes important here in these different brackets is first just analyzing very quickly the question whether we treat a mumar as a min or a mumar. And trying to figure out, is there something more to mumar lahachis than just this chashad issue like the Rashba? We know that, yeah. So the Gemara and Avodah Zarah basically goes to machlokas whether we treat a mumar as a mumar or a min. And the question is, are there going to be nafkaminas between those two things? So the simplest way to read the Gemara is by just saying that there's no nafkaminas that come, per se, directly out of this Gemara. The Gemara initially thought there's no nafkaminas that are coming out of this Gemara. Basically, the Gemara is saying that a mumar, in this Gemara, that we're saying a mumar is a min, and that's why we say, or not that's why we say, and we say moridin velo malin, and there's no chiv hashavas aveda. But, and just for technical reasons, we're not, mumar can't be discussed here, but we don't know if we said kamanda amar mumar, we don't know whether or not, we just don't know whether or not we would say moridin velo malin. But the Gemara is not talking about it. The other way to read this Gemara, and that's certainly how Tosas reads it, that there's no nafkamina. Some of Mikana is merely just a linguistic issue, as Rosai spent a lot of time discussing. And there's no nafkamina whatsoever that come out of, at least in Moridin and Aveda. It's also the Pashas of Rashi. Again, that doesn't mean, the Gemara Horios doesn't bring this up for linguistic purposes, to clarify a linguistic point in the Gemara, and just raise it as an objective question, whether we treat Mumar like a Mumar or a Min. So for in the Gemara, based on, in the Gemara in Horios, it really could be that there is nafkamina. It's just that the Gemara in Avodah Zarah doesn't tell you anything. Horios, it is an interesting question whether you're treating kamin or kamumar. There would likely be nafkamina between them. And one of them that many raise the Ra'ah, the Ra, and the Ritva, that even though there's no nafkamina for Aveda or Moridin, there is a nafkamina in Sefer Torah. That if you said that a mumar is kamin, his Sefer Torah is no good, and if you said he's a mumar, then it would be fine. So there could be nafkamina, just it wouldn't come out from the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. The other way to read the Avodah Zarah is that when the Gemara says it says some mikan mumar, and then it says take out mumar, and then it says he tries to give a suggestion. Maybe you should say that the moridim v'lo malin is mumar lahachis, and hashavas aveda is mumar l'teavon. So the Gemara said, maybe you should say that, and then you'd be totally fine. He says, no, that would only be the way your person was reading, Kamanda Omar, then Mumar is a min. Meaning what? You would only make the chiluk between Mumar, let's say Avon and Mumar Lahachis, and say that Mumar Lahachis is Moridim Velomalin, if Mumar Lahachis was a min. But if you held Mumar Lahachis is a Mumar, you never make the chiluk between Mumar, let's say Avon and Mumar Lahachis. And you would say Marid, and you wouldn't say Marid and Malin about Mumar. And that is actually the view that there is no, there's mo, that we say, we don't say Marid and Malin. But it's really Lo Marid and Umalin when it comes to Mumar. That is the view, Laman Damar Mumar, that's the Maharam in Rashi, which we never found. A day in the Meiri and Horios and Avodah Zarah. And the Piskei Rid of the Riaz, and the Bahag, according to the Nitziv, the Bahag's gears according to the Nitziv, takes even further. And not only do we say Moridin, we don't say Moridin v'lo Malin, we also say there's a Chiv HaShav Zaveda for a Mumar Lehachis. Wow. According to the Man Amar Mumar. Chidush, Givaldik. So on one end you have Tosvos, on the total other you have Tosvos and Rashi, there's no Nafkamina whatsoever. On the other hand you really have the Rid, the Riaz, and the Bahag, and then closer to them, but in the middle, you know, you have the Maram, the Rashi, and the Day of Imiri. And then also in the middle, you have the Ra'ah, the Ra'ah, and the Ritva, that even though there's no Nafkamina, the Moridim Lomalin, and Hashav Zaveda, you do have it, Lagabe, Ksiva, Sefer Torah. Fine. The Rambam just says Mumar. Okay, the Rambam just says Mumar. Okay, we'll get there. No, forget about that. Scratch that from the record. Okay, fine. So that's that. That's a lot of contingent on that discussion, how severely we treat a mumar. Kimin, kimumar, is an important question. And obviously the way that Rishonim are going to approach the halacha lemaisa question also, and how they even look at the bachlugas is going to be connected to their view in general on how seriously we treat Mamar Lahachis, correct? It's going to be connected to that. For example, just to give you examples, the Ra'ah said that actually the Machlokas is only about the middle case, when a guy is Shalol Lahachis and Shalol Te'avon. But when it comes to an actual Mamar Lahachis, of course he's going to be Kamin. Which is fascinating. Of course he's going to be Kamin, because for the Ra'ah, a guy who's a real Mamar Lahachis, that guy's a min. That guy is totally yotze. He's a gavur rasha. He loses everything. So of course, and that's what the Ra'ah, again, also out of conviction, that's what the Ra'ah says, you know, and when being the yachis to this debate. And you, again, okay. And then you had the opposite thing by the Rashba. And maybe even, okay. Now, just to continue with the Yeshidas, Tosvo is very similar to the Ra'ah, actually. Tosvos on Gimel Mabez says, Mumer Lahachis is Yotze, is his Shidas Pasul Afilu B'di Aved. His Shida, that Tosvos is Mumer, his Shida is Pasul Afilu B'di Aved. And he doesn't see the Mechalek between the Manda Omer, Min or Mumer. He seems to maybe think that Mumer Lahachis, Lenevela at least, is his shchita's possible with the eva ke'akum kikuti geri arayos? Even according to the man de amar mumar, there's no reason to assume he wouldn't say that. Okay. There's things to say about Tosfos, but we'll leave that. And the Rush says very similarly. The Rush in Siman Zayin says also, he's also within nevela. Rav Rosenzweig didn't think he was talking about mumar ochal nevelos l'te'avon, mumar ochal nevelos lachis, but mumar davar echad lachis, it didn't matter what. But I think it's very clear from the Rush that it's mumar l'nevela. He did mention that it might be that, and that this guy's also, he's mufka, because eino choshesh l'zvicha. The reason, since he's not choshesh l'zvicha whatsoever, then, I'm just getting distracted. If anyone wants to leave, obviously, for mincha, you can do that now. I'm going to try to finish. Fine. Just so I have Yishuv Adas. Sorry. Okay. The Rush in Siman Zayin does say that a mumar ochal nevelos lahachis is mufka from Shechita. And he seems to say that within nevela, at least, that he's mufka. It's unclear what he would say about mumar lahachis ledavar acher. And his reason is eino choshesh lezvicha, which is important. You know, he doesn't say it's because the guy is a mumar lechol Torah kula. He calls him kigoy in the end of the day. He says this because eino choshesh lezvicha. Someone has to do with his relationship to zvicha. And the lack of a positive, or I would say, the fact that he has a negative, demonstrably negative relationship with zvicha, takes away from his status as a bar zvicha. And the Bach was actually medayik from eino choshesh lezvoach. Well, two things. Number one, the Bach was medayik, the Beis Yosef was medayik, from Eino Choshesh Lezvoach, that would even be true of someone who is just Shalol L'Te'avon. Because even in the middle case, as someone who is not concerned to do Shechita, it doesn't matter so much that he's Mamish Lahachis, but just that he doesn't care. Only if he's Lo Shaveh Keter V'Achal Isura, always are we going to say that his Shechita is good. But at any point, we can identify that he won't be Choshesh Lezvoach, his Shechita is going to be no good. But the bigger point is that the Bach looked at Tosfos and the Rush and said for both of them that it was just Dirabanan. Again, probably also because he felt very strongly that it wasn't Stam that you can take away the Kedushas Yisrael of a Mumar Lahachis. So he just thought all these were Dinim Dirabanan, but his Shechita wouldn't really be Nevela. And Rav Rosenzweig didn't like it at all. Rav Rosenzweig thought it's very clear. You could say it, but it's very hard because Tosfos is actually... If Tosfos was forced to explain Mamar Lahachis, you know, Tosfos says Mamar Lahachis, Shechita is Kegoy, in a place where he doesn't need to say it. So the fact that he volunteers it in a place where he doesn't need to say it probably shows that he really does think the Shechita is Kegoy. Because what's the Rambam talking about? What's Tosfos talking about? He's talking about Shechita's Kuti Givei Arayos. That has nothing to do with Mamar Lahachis. And yet the Rambam wants to say he's not a Bar Zvicha in that context. But what I will add, just to push back a little bit, is if you read the Lashon of the Rush, I really think the Bach is getting a little bit from there. If you read the Rush's Lashon is actually It's a little bit, if he's just saying he's mufka lagamre, even on a dioraisa level, I think there are just some things that are strange. He says, v'avayin lahachis, peyrishri, kevan deino choshesh lezoach. Again, it seems to have a little bit have to do with like the fact that we're concerned. Nothing to do with this guy not being a gavra, nothing to do with him being a gavra rasha, but we're concerned that he's not going to shecht appropriately. That's already a little bit of a hint, honestly. That could be like a derabanan. But more than that, havei k'oved kochavim de'eno bar zvicha. He's like an oved kochavim that's not a bar zvicha, which should be enough. But then he says, v'aser lecho mishchitaso. Like, what do you mean, v'aser lecho mishchitaso? If someone shchita is kinevela, you don't need to tell me v'aser lecho mishchitaso. I really do think the Bach was getting that from there. But again, that was nothing that was said in shir. That was just my own ha'ara. Fine, and that was the Tosa and the Rosh, but the Ran expanded actually to Mumar Ledavar Echad, to any, a guy who's a Mumar Lahachas to anything is going to be not a Bar Zvicha. It doesn't matter that it's not just in Avela, but no matter what it is, he's not going to be a Bar Zvicha. And not a Bar Zvicha. And that's actually what the Shulchan Aruch quotes, that a Mumar Lahachas, any Davar Echad, is always going to be Nevela. It's always going to be not a bar zvicha. But just going back to, I missed this point, and maybe this will end so that everyone can get the mincha, and I'll do the other thing next time. The question of dirabanan, which is a small point, we'll do that now. And then just the Ran in Avodah Zarah, in how he reads the Rif and the Rambam, and then trying to pull all those pieces together. But more or less, we really did cover everything, and it's better that we all dive in the Beis Medrash now. So just the final point, just back on the Beis Yosef, the Beis Yosef was medayik that in the middle case, based on the lashon of Eino Choshesh Lezvicha, that as long as you're not leteavon, it's going to be not a bar zvicha, because anyone is Eino Choshesh Lezvicha. But the Ran actually said in that case, you're not mufka. The middle case is totally fine. And the Ra'ah, again, I've said this already twice now, says it depends based on the machlokas. The machlokas is actually the middle case. If you hold mumar is a min, no good. The middle case is no good. And it's more like the Beis Yosef. And if you say he's Kemumar, then it's more like the Ran, and he is fine. And then the Ritva and Avodah Zarah took that further, saying the same exact thing as the Ra'ah, but said, Ein lecha min gadol mizeh. There's no bigger min than an actual Mumar Lahachis. So obviously it has to be that the Machlogas, whether min or Mumar, is only in the middle case. Because an actual Mumar Lahachis is going to be Kimin. Sorry for speaking fast. I do that a lot, but we have a little time in Jane. And then that we had that Kesef Mishnah who said that the middle case is always going to be Leteavon. You actually have to exhibit Lahachis tendencies. And Rabbeinu Yerucham said the opposite, that it's always Lahachis, because in order to be a Mumar Leteavon, you actually really need to have Taiva. But the middle case is going to be Lahachis. Just the final thing on Derabanan. The question of Derabanan is a Mumar Lahachis on a Derabanan going to be a Mumar Lahachis on a Deraisa level? If when we're talking about as Chumra as Ha'avera, then or the Maisa Avera, Chumras Isra Maisavir, we would never say that a Derabanan will qualify for a Dioraisa, which really does seem to be the view of the Meiri, the way of Rozak read it, the view of the Meiri in Horios. But there is the Meret and the Rishus actually does exist in a Avera Derabanan. And maybe, like the Rabbeinu Yonah in the beginning of Perkei Avos, more so than in an Avera Dioraisa, because the type of guy who says, the type of guy who stays away even derabanan is someone who's clearly very committed to it, and someone who's like, oh, it's a derabanan, the onesh is not so big, so I'll give in. That shows a more maybe deeper level of mumrius than someone who won't avoid a deraisa. And some ways that makes derabanans more chumra from the merit point of view than deraisas. So the way that the Gemara, he seemed to be reading the Gemara in Horios, was that really, any Dirabanan will qualify as long as there's sufficient Pirsum. And Dirabanans really will have a status of a Mumar, Lahachas Deraisa. But the Meiri said, no, that's never true. Typically, a Dirabanan won't be a Mumar Lahachas on a Deraisa level. But except of the case where it's really Mefursam Lakol Keshemesh, that's the only time where we'll say that he's going to be a Mumar Lahachas even on a Deraisa level. But the truth is, as he pointed out, it could be that really the Gemara is saying the same thing as the Meiri the whole time. That it's really only very exceptional cases, like really exceptional cases, that we're going to treat a Mumar on a Derabanan like a Mumar Dioraisa. Okay, that's it for now. We're going to do Mumar L'Avodah Zarah and L'Chal V'Shavah is probably on Monday. And we'll finish up with the Ran, sorry for the time, and the Rif and the Rambam next time. Okay, Shkoyach.